Blog Talk Radio.
Life is a song worth singing.
I can tell.
Sing it. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it? You hold a key in the palm of your hand.
Use it.
Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Why don't you
sing it?
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and today's date is May the 5th, 2021. And you know, if you join us on a regular basis, the slogan for this show, if it's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, captures that power for your financial benefit. The Positive Change, LLC, serves as a blueprint for economic self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American-owned solar design, installation, and workforce development training companies to address the effects of high energy costs at our historically Black colleges and universities, also to utilize Black-owned farmlands and HBCU campuses to develop capacity and initiatives for solar installation projects to bring down the under and unemployment of Black men and women locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education in the Black community through Black Talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, and is also brought to you every week by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BSLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative, and you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at Positive Change, that's PositiveChange, P as in Paul, C as in Cat.com, that's PositiveChangePC.com. Go over to our news and events tab, please click on that link and you'll be able to scroll down and you'll be able to follow us today. Ladies and gentlemen, over the years that we've been bringing this platform to you, Solar Now in the Future, we're happy to let everyone know that we also have another sponsor for this show. It's called the National Association of Blacks and Solar, and you can get more information on that organization by logging on to blackssinsolar.org. That's blacksinsolar.org, the National Association of Blacks and Solar, which is our latest sponsor of this show, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Now, if you've been following us on this platform, you know that every week we reach out to try to bring you news that you can definitely use. We don't have a scheduled guest for today, but I want all of those who are in my listening audience to please, please remember, you can go to two sources now to follow us with what we're going to be presenting today. The first website, once again, is the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, That's PositiveChangePC.com. That's PositiveChangePC.com. Please click on our news and events tab. And the second website is blacksandsolar.org. And you want to click on Secretary Granholm's visit to Howard University in her first in-person event to discuss workforce diversity and inclusion and research opportunities. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to be able to find that information by logging on to our website at PositiveChangePC.com. Once again, please click on our news and events tab, and you're going to be able to follow us as we, in fact, work through our show in our first segment, being that we do not have a scheduled guest for today. We're going to play for you in its entirety the webinar, which was presented in the form of a conference at Howard University on this past Tuesday, where the Secretary of the Department of Energy, Granholm, was there to make a $400,000 gift for one of the award to one of the research grantees, which Howard University was one of those research grantees. So without further ado, we're going to get right to the business of playing for you this workshop. The voice you are hearing now is the voice of the Secretary of the Department of Energy, Ms. Granholm.
And the topic, of course, is expanding our pipeline of diverse talent in STEM. And so glad that everybody is here. It's a huge priority for the Biden administration. The data makes it clear that we need diversity in science, technology, engineering, and math. There was a Pew research that was recently released that says that Black and Hispanic Americans make up 11 and 17% of the country's workforce, but only 9 and 8% of all STEM jobs. And of course, at the Department of Energy, we have 17 national laboratories. We are the solutions department in the federal government with respect especially to climate and energy. And so we really want to see a diverse pipeline of our future workforce and our problem solvers and scientists. And so really excited to be here. Just 15% of the nation's engineers and architects are women. Now, 40% of our physical scientists are women, so that's good. That's good progress, but we still have a ways to go, and there is certainly not enough diverse talent coming up behind them. So Black and Hispanic students, along with women, are underrepresented, as you all know, because we're going to have this conversation, in bachelor's and master's and doctorate programs in STEM fields. And at the same time, higher education institutions that produce the highest share of STEM graduates, diverse STEM graduates, like our historically Black colleges and universities and minority-serving institutions, those institutions routinely get among the lowest shares of federal research funding. So that is a problem. And the consequences, as you all know, are significant. We're missing out on, obviously, untapped talent, but it also leaves us with this narrower innovation and solution path, because we see what happens when our focus is too narrow, because the inputs are too narrow. We see it in artificial intelligence. For example, when early voice recognition software could not identify women's voices because the pitch was higher. We see it in facial recognition software all the time, right now even, where black 100 times more likely to be misidentified than white people, which of course has ramifications in all sorts of realms, but in particular at a moment when we're talking about criminal justice and people being misidentified. It happens when you don't have the right people at the table, and you don't have a diverse collection at the table, things get engineered in a way that misses out. And so, for example, safety features in the auto industry, the car industry, they have those safety features around an average male body, and that causes women to be, even today, this is the study that in 2003, but today, because of used cars, et cetera, women suffer 73% more likely to be injured in a car accident because of that engineering blind spot. We cannot abide blind spots like this, particularly as we work toward our transition to clean energy. This administration is really committed to making the transition to clean energy an inclusive transition, offering benefits to every community because not every community has benefited up to this point. In fact, some communities, particularly communities that are indigenous and black and people of color, have disproportionately been negatively affected by pollution. And so we want to make sure that voices are at the table that are representative of communities who can benefit from this transition. The Department of Energy is committed to bringing that variety to America's research and development efforts, and that, of course, starts with STEM at HBCUs. So today, we are announcing at the Department of Energy $17 million for STEM projects and internships, including those at HBCUs and MSIs. And today, Dr. Yan is the beneficiary and his team of one such award, $400,000, studying how we can harness electromagnetic energy, which is the stuff that you might use from your microwave or when you send text messages. But he's going to use that energy to turn fossil fuels into methane, like methane, into low-cost hydrogen. And so we're going to hear from him about that, and I'm going to ask him to speak in English that my 86-year-old mother will be able to understand. And that's just one of several funding awards geared toward HBCUs and other minority-serving institutions that we're giving out today. We're also, in addition to the grants, we're also announcing three major summer programs that will involve internships. So 900 internships today through DOE's national lab. Nearly 180 of those internships will go to students from minority-serving institutions and community colleges. We're excited to give these students hands-on experience at our national lab. And for Howard University sophomore Justin Walkup, that means bringing his civil engineering studies to life at DOE's Argonne National Lab, which is in Chicago, where he's going to analyze what goes into manufacturing and recycling clean energy technologies and how we can make those processes better for our environment. Our national lab staff is also going to collaborate on research projects that are run by nearly 60 students and faculty members from minority-serving institutions, including Dr. Sonia Smith, who is a mechanical engineering professor at Howard, who will be working with DOE's Brookhaven National Lab in New York to research thermal management systems for batteries. Dr. Smith, by the way, was the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in mechanical and aerospace engineering from the University of Virginia. This administration wants to make sure that countless more follow her, and we know that means giving far greater support to far more students than just the 180 getting internships today. And that's why the American Jobs Plan calls for investing tens of billions of dollars to eliminate the racial and gender inequities in STEM. The president is committed to making sure we have that pipeline and is eager to put money where the mouth is, to open up equitable access to federal research funding, to boost collaborative ties between DOE's national labs and our HBCUs, and to turn those institutions into STEM powerhouses, molding the brilliant minds that we need to lead in 21st century innovation. And we know that we're at one of those STEM powerhouses right now. So it's the honor of my life to serve a president who has embraced advancing racial equity as a core tenet of his administration. We know that who's at the table matters, and I'm so delighted to have at the table with us today. So Dr. Tony Wuta, who is Howard's Provost and Chief Academic Officer, Professor Quentin Williams, who is Chair of Howard's Department of Physics and Astronomy, Dr. Janelle Burke, who is an Associate Professor in Howard's Department of Biology, Dr. Kim Lewis, who is the Associate Dean for Research and Graduate Programs, Christopher Flowers, who is a Howard sophomore studying computer science, and Provost Wuta, of course, the man of the hour. Before we dive into our discussion, I want to give Dr. Yan the floor to tell us a little about his research. We're super excited to be awarding this your team a $400,000 research grant. So tell us a little bit about the importance of innovative hydrogen production and what it means for Howard to play a role in this critical research.
Ladies and gentlemen, because we are in the position that we can and move forward this presentation, we want to set the table as why I went directly into the presentation of the director, Mrs. Granholms, of the Department of Energy. Now, you have had the opportunity to hear what the Department of Energy is planning to do. If we don't invest in STEM students and faculty from a diverse background, we are missing out on untapped talent, leaving us with a narrow innovation and insignificant solution to the problems we face. Granholms said, we certainly can't abide blind spots like this, particularly as we work towards the transition to clean energy and inclusive transitions offering benefits for every community. Now, the reason why I am speaking now is because I had the privilege of working with Dr. Gary Harris, who served as the head of the Department of Engineering at Howard University. He also was a part form alternative from the, and he put together this white paper and when he was the assistant provost for research and graduate studies, Dr. Gary Harris, PhD from Howard University. Now, Dr. Harris has recently passed on, but I became very, very good friends with Dr. Harris. And Dr. Harris prepared this white paper, DC Solar Energy Primer. The District of Columbia is committed to establishing the goals and targets of responding to climate change. The Clean Energy DC is a district climate and energy plan. DC is scheduled to reduce greenhouse gases by 50% below 26 levels by year 2032 and 80% by year 2050. Rooftop solar generation is the leading strategy to meet these goals. To assist in this strategy, D.C. Mayor Bowser signed the Renewable Energy Portfolio Expansion Act of 2016. This act will place D.C. as a national leader to push to decarbonize our economies, increase access to clean energy for D.C. residents, and create long-term pipeline for green jobs and business creation. We will serve 100,000 low-income households by year 2032. That's more than 6,000 homes per year, and we will reduce their electricity bills by 50%. As a result, we will be creating at least 100 green jobs the first year, with that number growing every year through year 2032. This means reducing carbon emissions, lowering residents' energy bills, and providing pathways to middle class through the marketplace and clean energy is at an all at the same time. The science of climate change is predicting the district will experience much warmer average temperatures, up to 2 to 3 times as many more dangerous hot days, longer, hotter, and more frequently heat waves, more frequent intense heavy rain events, higher tides as a result for rising sea levels. Reducing greenhouse gases will help lessen the impacts on D.C. As part of the looking forward policies, including renewable portfolio standards to require electric suppliers to provide increased amounts of renewable energy to district residents, the target includes separate solar targets by year 2032 and an increase of extension by 2.5 by 2032. Now, this goes into talking about the amount of energy that Howard University spends per year, depending on how cold the winters are, between 15 to 18 million. And if we look across the board at all of our historically black colleges and universities, we'll find that their number two fixed cost after salaries is energy. I'm going to play this tape. I'm going to want you to listen very, very carefully, because the University of the District of Columbia and Howard University has 274 acres of land in a farm which is located in near Hyattsville, Maryland, here, right outside the district. Howard University sets on Georgia Avenue. They have two other main campuses, which is the School of Divinity, which is about 28 acres in Northeast D.C., the Law School, which is located in Upper Northwest off of Connecticut Avenue, and the main campus on Georgia Avenue. We're talking about the University of the District of Columbia. The project that Dr. Harris was working on was to build a large-scale solar research power plant to offset the energy costs at those two universities, as well as provide that as a research and development training ground for Howard University, the University of the District of Columbia, and D.C. public school students. This did not come to fruition. This is not brought up in this entire conference. We're going to go ahead and look at what they're proposing from Howard University.
Sure. Thank you very much, Madam Secretary, and good morning, everyone. So it is actually my great pleasure and honor to be here today and be a part of this important conversation on DOE's American Jobs Plan. So first of all, I want to thank the Department of Energy for supporting us in this very university for their support and research, and in particular, I want to mention and acknowledge the support and assistance from my colleagues at the Research and Service. their assistance for me to prepare and submit screening proposal. Okay. So as everybody knows, fossil fuel now comprise about 80% of global primary energy demand. And energy system is a source that is responsible for approximately 2/3 of the global carbon dioxide or CO2 emission. So in order to reduce this CO2 emission, it is critical for us to replace fossil fuel with some other clean energy sources. But when we talk about clean energy, what comes into our mind usually is something like solar energy, wind, and /or nuclear energy. But if we take a look at the bigger picture of clean energy sources, fossil fuels are not excluded. By which I mean, we can convert fossil fuel into hydrogen, which is a form of clean energy. When it burns, it gives us energy and produces a byproduct, which is H2O. And by the way, that is more commonly known as water. Right? So it's obviously a very clean energy source. So, but the problem currently is the production of hydrogen is still too expensive to be affordable. So in this research, what we're going to do is we aim at developing novel methods that use electromagnetic energy to assist, by which I mean to initiate and sustain the fossil fuel to hydrogen conversion. Okay, so our goal here is targeting at high throughput and high yield, low cost hydrogen production so that hydrogen will become eventually affordable to the energy system and also to broad public. Okay, so in my research, myself, my colleague at Howard University, and our collaborators at the University of Houston will work collaboratively, okay, to develop advanced methods that hybridize currently cutting-edge technologies in computational electromagnetics, fluid and thermodynamics, molecular dynamics, and also quantum chemistry in order to improve and optimize the hydrogen production process and system. So this three-year DOE grant will help us to initiate our research in this very critical area and also build our research capacity. And more importantly, it also provides us with necessary resources to support and educate several graduate students and undergraduate research assistants for them to participate in the learning and research of this very important topic. And also, since the focus of this particular DOE program is not only about research, but also about education and training of our next generation skilled and innovative workforce. So I also would like to share some of our thoughts and practice in this regard. Okay. First thing, education of our next generation is a topic that's too big to be addressed by a three-year program. But we would like to leverage this grant as an initiating opportunity to foster the long-term partnership between us and the DOE, such as we can together achieve our objectives. So our university, I think, is very uniquely positioned and has contributed, and I believe will continue to contribute to the education of African-American and other underrepresented minority students. So currently, I'm leading an effort to build a center for research and education aiming at broadening participation of African-American students and other minority students. So the idea is to lead, to be led by Howard University, and we have participants from multiple sectors, including several well-known universities, national labs, and also industrial companies. And more importantly, we have committed participation from District of Columbia Public Schools, DCPS, and our own Howard University Middle School of Mathematics and Science. So collectively, we have designed this center where we center around a key research topic, let's say innovation in clean energy production or hydrogen generation, and around which we designed comprehensive and inclusive education programs that target students at all levels. Because we have the expertise of professors in universities, scientists and engineers from national labs and private sectors, and we also have educators, like teachers and administrators from middle schools and high schools together. What is more important is we have access and connection to our students at all levels, from middle school, high school, undergraduate students, graduate students, and postdocs, and professionals, and teachers. So this center, we have designed this educational program to target each stage of education. For example, we have early engagement of educators and students in high school, middle schools. We have research and education support for our undergraduate students, and we also have research exchange and internship programs for graduate students. So collectively, we hope that design this, we call a STEAM pathway, we can guide our students from early stage onto this area of STEAM study so that that will lead to a successful career in STEAM-related areas. And we sincerely hope that DOE can play a very important role in this effort.
We do too.
And thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I just want to tell you, being the new energy secretary, this is my first event here at Howard, just to let you know, the first time we've been out of the building. But one of the things that I've been doing is talking with my counterparts in other countries regarding the solutions that they would like to see to get to everybody's goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Hydrogen is the number one thing that countries are focused on to have, you know, baseload-like power at an affordable way that's dispatchable. It's just huge. So the subject area that you are working in is so utterly important. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank
we look forward to big things from that. All right, so despite the great work that's being done here, we know that there has been, as I mentioned, historical disparity in funding of research at HBCUs and minority-serving institutions. And Dr. Lewis, maybe you can give us a window into, obviously, structural racism comes to mind, but I'd love to hear from your perspective so that people are educated about why that has been the case.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity allowing me to address this issue. I think that the inequity in the federal research funding is due to an inequity in the research infrastructure, such as grants and administration personnel, state-of-the-art research laboratories and resources, and building infrastructure at some of the HBCUs. So, for example, not having state-of-the-art research laboratories could prevent or minimize faculty members from getting or obtaining preliminary data to demonstrate a proof of concept that's needed to compete for these research funds. In addition to that, a lot of the faculty members have a heavy teaching workload. And then we also must consider that there may be a possibility of implicit bias during the review process that could contribute to the inequity in the federal research funds.
So interesting, because part of the American Jobs Plan has $40 billion for investment in capital projects related to labs and the lab infrastructure, the hard infrastructure, and half of that is slated to go to HBCUs and minority-serving institutions. So it's a step toward correcting some of that, hopefully. What are the steps that you – give me some advice as head of the Department of Energy about what you would do to begin to reverse some of that historical inequity.
Yes, so one thing could be for the department to just solicit proposals that are exclusive to HBCUs. This would help tremendously, and it would give us equal playing field with other institutions. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely necessary. It would not only empower, but it would exploit the expertise that already exists on campuses at HBCUs, in particular STEM fields. The Centers of Excellence that is being proposed by the Biden-Harris plan is a great opportunity. It would give access to state-of-the-art research instrumentation on the campuses where the faculty are, which will allow them to compete for federal funding. And in addition, it would just help close the gap with the inequity and the funding that goes to the HBCUs.
Great. Well, our team is taking notes. You're back there, because we want to make sure that we are part of helping to address that. And so part of this, of course, it devolves around students, And Christopher, you're obviously a current student studying computer sciences, I mentioned. You're also a Karsh STEM scholar, which means that you must be at the top of the heap with respect to your abilities. And I'm wondering if you can describe how your experience here has helped you prepare for a career in STEM.
Sure, of course. And I want to say thank you. Good morning. Appreciate you being here and also the question. I want to answer that question in two parts. So the first part being related specifically to opportunities, which we kind of already had this discussion about. So I think being at Howard and also being a part of the Parsons Scholars Program has opened the doors for opportunities that I wouldn't have necessarily had at other institutions, specifically at other non-HBCUs, just because that's not a big focus, as we've mentioned. For example, I had an internship at UC San Diego after my freshman year where I was interning in their computer science and engineering department. That internship was the result of a partnership program between UC San Diego and Howard specifically that was a part of a larger initiative to prepare HBCU students for graduate study in specifically schools in the UC system. And so it's opportunities like those where I'm able to explore my interest, find out what I like, figure out what career opportunities and work opportunities exist, and then I'm able to better inform my decision-making as it pertains to my career and the path that I choose to follow. Now, I wouldn't have been aware of that program if it weren't for the people that I met at Howard, if it weren't for that actual partnership itself. It's possible that I never would have had the opportunity. So having those things available and the people around me that helped me with not just when I was at the internship, getting through it, understanding how to navigate my first internship as a college freshman, but also helping with the application process and all of these other things that go into it, having that outside support to take advantage of these opportunities and grow, and then that kind of ties into my second part, which is related to community. So the people that I've met at Howard, whether it be faculty and staff, whether it be other students, I know that I have people around me that if I run into a roadblock, I can refer to them for support. And so having the support of those people in addition to the opportunities that have been mentioned for specifically HBCUs and HBCU students, I think it's really important and really impactful. And me being at Howard has given me the option to actually be a part of that.
So I hear how great all of that is. And I'm wondering, what advice would you give me as the head of the Department of Energy to foster that kind of community, I'll say, in the science and engineering that's done inside of our department?
I think you have spoken to it a little bit about these very specific programs for HBCUs and minority-serving institutions. I think really focusing on that and making sure that there is support for these specific groups is very important because a lot of the problems that are faced in our communities and the ways that we have to go about our careers and navigating those types of situations are fairly different from other people. So I think making sure that there is that mm-hmm. very niche support for our groups and communities is very important.
And what about, just think about us when you decide to embark on your career, because we have a lot of needs in computer science as well as other areas. But for the folks that we want to be able to send a message to your students, letting them know that there's a lot of science and policy and, world-changing projects to work on inside of the federal government as well. So getting the word out is part of that, right? Which is one of the reasons why I am here today. All right. So as you probably know, President Biden is really committed to environmental justice.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just stopped the playing of the video on the show because it's time for me to bring this not to a stop, but to bring in some clarity of needs of how the Department of Energy, working with our small business development centers at our HBCUs and our community development corporations, or CDACs, which are located on these HBCU campuses, with looking at how our students, the brain trust of this of young students such as this young person who is concentrated area is in research and development in STEM. We understand that and understand it clearly, but there is also a greater need, ladies and gentlemen, when we look at the solar industry and the fact out of 9,000 companies doing business in the United States of America, we have less than 25 African-American companies that I have been able to verify over the last 4 years producing this show, Solar Now and the Future with its Economic Impact. And many of you who follow me know that I wear several hats. I am the president of Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, which is a cooperative set up and designed to increase market share for African-American solar installation, design, workforce development, and installation companies doing business in the United States of America. Now, it is very, very clear of what the Department of Energy's mission was to engage the African-American community. Secretary Granholm going to Howard University first and presenting this great grant for what this gentleman is doing with this project. But I think it's a grave disservice to know that in this form, Gilbert Campbell, who is a Howard University alumnus, Dr. Lillian Abrams, who is the CEO of Peer Consultants, one of our leading African-American engineering and design companies. Mr. Mark Davis, who founder of WDC Solar in Southeast Washington, D.C. Mr. Damian Strawn of ARS Consulting, an alumnus of Howard University, an engineer. None of these companies were brought to the table to talk about building large-scale solar, community solar projects for development around Howard University, businesses around Howard University, and if we don't include this discussion at these opportunities that we get when a Secretary Granholm comes to, if the conversation is not expanded to include economic development and workforce development training programs that can be hosted at Howard University, University of the District of Columbia, and our D.C. public schools to train more community-based target workforce development programs, which run 6 to 8 some weeks, some 8 months at the most, for certification programs for energy auditors, for electricians, for HVAC, because of this urgent need to prepare a workforce that will be able to deal with electric vehicle infrastructure wiring. We need more electricians. This was not a part of the conversation, ladies and gentlemen. I understand that. That is why I'm doing a show today and presenting to you what was presented and what should have been included in the conversation. Now, we're going to go back and we're going to take the opportunity to take a slight pause for the calls here on the platform, Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America, and we'll be right back.
Someone singing, I can sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do with your life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to the airways of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And I, you know, I'm your host, Ronald Bethay, and you know if you join us on a regular basis, that call-in number is 646-668-2948. That's 646-668-2948. And please remember you have to press 1 on your phone pad after dialing the call-in number. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you, if you join us on a regular basis, you know this. What? That this show is brought to you every week by the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative. And the slogan for the show, if there's power in numbers, then the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative captures that power for your financial benefit. Now, the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, LLC, serves as an economic blueprint for self-reliance for solar and renewable energy companies, both large and small, along with increasing market share for African-American solar installation, design, and workforce development training companies to address the high effects of unemployment and underemployment of our African-American youth, young men and women, locally and nationally, also to educate the Black community locally and nationally about the economic impacts of climate change and the need for environmental education through more Black talk radio programs such as Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. And you know it's also brought to you by the Black Sports Legends Foundation, BFLF HBCU Solar Radio Talk Show Initiative. And you can get more information on that initiative by logging on to our website at positivechangepc.com. Go over to our GoFundMe link, and you'll be able to find more information about this platform, which you are listening to now. Over the World Wide Web, over Blog Talk Radio, we're streaming via Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and you can also find our show on iTunes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this show is brought to you also by the National Association of Blacks in Solar, and you can get more information by logging on to that website at the blacksinsolar.org. Now we get ready. We're going to return back to the conference that was held at Howard University on Thursday of this week, as we were listening to presentations that was put on at Howard University, and it in fact
so much
was chaired by Secretary of Commerce, Ms. Granholms. We're going to go back
as well as other areas, but
to our interview, listening
to
the
conference. Students, you know, letting them know that there's a lot of science and policy and, you know, world-changing projects to work on inside the federal government as well. So getting the word out is part of that, right? Which is one of the reasons why I am here today. So as you probably know, President Biden is really committed to environmental justice in our nation's transition. And I think I'm going to go to you next, Dr. Burke, because I know Howard has taken a unique approach, your environmental studies program, an interdisciplinary approach to getting input and how to solve some of the environmental justice issues as we transition to a clean energy future. The American Jobs Plan and the President envisions that 40% of all of investments will be steered toward communities that have been left behind. So in your role as a program coordinator for Howard's environmental studies program, I'm wondering how you can describe how we can learn from what Howard is doing, how Howard is leading the way in educating that next generation of scientists in this problem set. Sure, and thank you for your question. Yes, so you're correct. I'm a professor of biology, but also I'm currently directing our interdisciplinary environmental studies program in the College of Arts and Sciences. And our program has been interdisciplinary from its inception. So we have faculty with expertise in the built environment, in sustainable design, in climate science, in disaster response. Mm. So students are taking courses from a broad range of different knowledge fields and areas of expertise. Our foundational courses are rooted and rigorous. So the foundational course is an intro to environmental studies. But the other foundational courses are science and public policy and environmental inequality. They want to have a CPS in environmental science. They will get that comprehensive environmental education, which includes the social science of environmental justice, which is a field in of itself, and then also science and public policy. And then the students are approaching more from the social science or the BA perspective. They're getting that fundamental rigorous understanding of the science, right, behind earth science, behind climate science as well, to inform their education, right, if they're going into the policy realm or law, for example.
So say a word then, sort of getting on the balcony a bit, about the HBCU's broadly role in this environmental justice.
Of course, yes. What's important is about the community perspective, and from the students, often they're coming from communities that are experiencing some of the most significant environmental hazards or environmental challenges, and this allows them to have that comprehensive education to help bring back to their communities or to become knowledgeable, have a voice at the decision-making table as well, right, in the national perspective as well, and innovating in the technology realm as well to fight some of these challenges.
Well, in community organizing, we often say nothing about us without us, and that is definitely true in that in the environmental justice space. Thank you for your leadership and for the interdisciplinary nature of the problem solving. Just as a parallel to that, the Biden administration has really got such an interdisciplinary approach to climate, for example. So we have a whole climate cabinet, but that doesn't just include the Department of Energy. It also includes the Department of Transportation. It also includes the Department of Commerce. It includes, you know, it's a whole broad effort, obviously, EPA. So, you know, we know that
smart solutions really require input. And sometimes it's a little bit clunkier to have a huge number of people, but your outcome is always so much richer, better, and more effective. So thank you for that. All right, Professor Williams, I'm going to ask you next. I know, you know, when considering issues related to climate change, the climate scholars that have been leading those conversations have not come from diverse communities often. And obviously we want to Professor Burke's point of listening to communities that have been affected, right? So I'm wondering if you have advice for me on that, how the Department of Energy can ensure that these frontline communities see the benefits and have access to clean energy technologies. I'm wondering how Howard is leading the way in that space as well.
Sure. Thank you, Secretary. So the environmental issues that we're facing right now are actually being looked at in terms of being an existential threat in terms of climate change. And how is this linked to renewable energy? So right now, we have about $1.3 trillion of purchasing power that's held in the black community in America. And a lot of that goes to housing, transportation, and food. So I say that right now, in terms of combating this climate change impact, we're seeing that the vehicle industry, automobile industry, is migrating towards electrification,
mm-hmm.
so electric vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's so much money that's being spent on transportation, this is a multi-trillion-dollar industry that's growing up before us right now, and not in the future, but the future is now. So with that, I think that it would be a travesty for African Americans or minorities to not play a critical role or a significant role in this industry that's growing right before us. And how can we play a role in that? Find an entry point in the value chain. So we go from source materials to the research, science, and engineering, and development, all the way to marketing and sales of vehicles, to even the recycling of the batteries that go into it. The batteries are the key component for the electric powertrain. There are a lot of problems that still need to be solved associated with battery technology. So what we're doing here at Howard University is that we have a battery laboratory, and we also have colleagues working in chemistry and engineering who are looking at several of the issues associated with batteries and making advanced batteries using high technology materials like graphene and carbon, nanofibers, and et cetera. So the Department of Energy, I'm glad to hear that they're going to be investing into these R&D.
Ladies and gentlemen, we only programmed our show for 60 minutes today. You can go to our website at positivechangepc.com, and you can hear the entire interview in its entirety. I am speaking to you now not as just a radio host or podcast host. I'm speaking to you as the president of the Positive Change Purchasing Cooperative, and I have been recently installed to serve as the president of the National Association of Blacks in Solar. So we're speaking from a standpoint of, if you are listening to what I am saying, and if you're listening to what the professor just said about the electric vehicle infrastructure and the future is now, we have to be engaged in the actual building of electric vehicle charge infrastructure stations on black-owned properties and land across this country. And our HBCUs can also play a critical role in that. Now, we're going to go ahead and let everybody know you can get more information about this show by logging on to where? The Legends Foundation. Clicking on the link for Granholm's Secretary of Energy first visit to Howard University, or you can go to positivechangepc.com. Please click on our news and events tab. You will see the same caption. Click on that, scroll down. You can listen to the entire presentation at Howard University. It was entirely too long for me to fit into a 60-minute show for you today, but I hope that you enjoyed what you heard. I don't think you can hear anybody else bringing this information that is taking place in real time from one of our HBCU campuses to our communities nationally and worldwide. So I'm going to give myself a big hand for putting this together and bringing it to the African-American community. And when we send this link over to the Department of Energy, Secretary of Energy, we need to get this show funded to syndicate it nationally so it can be heard over the Urban One radio network in 76 markets across this country, because this information is too vital that you are bringing to the table that our community needs to hear. It's called community engagement. That is what Solar Now and the future does with the economic impact on Black America. So until next week, ladies and gentlemen, all we can say to you is, if you would please, peace, as we close another edition of Solar Now and the Future with its economic impact on Black America. Until next week, we don't want you to meet us back here. We want you to beat us back here. Until next week, we say go in peace.
Someone's singing, I can just sing it. Life is a song worth singing. Why don't you sing it? You hold the key in the palm of your hand. Use it. Don't blame your life on a master plan. Change it. Only you generate the power to decide what to do. Life. You're a fool if you think you're helpless. You control what you do with your life. Life is a song worth singing.